Hey, this is Mike.
Hey, this is Kaz, and you are listening to Two Broke Watch Knobs, the only watch podcast where one of the hosts will be progressively getting higher and higher due to pain fumes. You have made it all the way to episode 273. Michael, hello.
It's a special episode. This was
It's a special episode.
This is planned. Just for our guest, you know, we're taking on a new tradition of, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I've got paint drying in here. Next episode, Mike, you'll be doing drywall repair at your end over there with all your windows and doors closed, right?
It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
It's going to be a ton of fun. Everyone, if you're watching on YouTube, which you should be, you'll probably all just already notice right now, we have a special guest with us, Nick from DC Vintage Watches. Nick, say hi to everyone.
Hey, how's everyone doing? Thanks for having me.
Everyone respond all at once, in your cars, on the train, in bed, wherever you are. This is going to be really, really cool. Michael and I haven't done, I don't think we've done, there's two things we haven't done. Well, there's lots of things we haven't done. We haven't done a really proper, tried and true, affordable vintage watch episode in a while, and we've never done one about a brand specifically. Right?
Yeah, I was looking back at the old episodes, and it was always some type of watch. We did even precious metals at one point. I think did digitals at one point as well. So, but we were kind of, we've been wanting to start up the segment again lately, and just so happened that we got in touch with you, Nick, DC Vintage Watches, and immediately in my head I thought Seiko, because Seiko was, as you said before, the gateway for a lot of us, and I think
the gateway drug.
I think a lot of the slam dunk models that people were maybe looking for 10 years ago, maybe not necessarily. Well, some definitely have gotten very expensive.
True,
but they're not really the no-brainer choice anymore. So we just wanted to, you know, get in on your expertise and talk about what affordable vintage Seiko looks like today, how it's changed, you know, in the past 10 years, and you know, you have a lot of experience, so you can share that with the audience as well.
No.
We can even make predictions about what models currently in production will become hot vintage Seikos in 20, 30, 40 years. Right?
That's true.
This is going to be a ton of fun. So, Nick, thank you for joining. As is tradition for everyone listening on the show, it is. We are nothing without our traditions. We have to do an audio wrist check, and we would love, Nick, if you start the audio wrist check, tell them what you're wearing, tell them about the watch, and we decided to see what you got, because I've been trying to see what you have on camera, but I haven't been able to tell. So I'm very curious to hear.
No, I've made no effort to hide the fact that the Seiko 6139 is my favorite watch of all time. Because there's so many different design variants. There's so much history there. And this one, this is the first time I think I've noted that I even have this watch. This is what I would refer to as, bar none, the most rare Seiko 6139 out there.
Wow.
So this is a Seiko 6139 in early 70s, 7010, aka the military. It's called the military because the Japanese air defense, self-defense forces, and their navy were issued these watches. And it also has kind of like a military stance because it has Arabic numbers on the dials, and Seiko wasn't doing a lot of those back then. So this one actually was issued to the Japanese air defense forces. And if you, I'm going to hold it up, and I don't know if it's going to focus, but you see the nomenclature on the back of the watch. And Seiko made these specifically for these military forces. And the reason we know this is because the back of the dial has that insignia on it. It wasn't an afterthought. The serial number is actually in the case number, is actually in the inside of the case back. So it was designed like that from the factory. It wasn't something engraved after the fact. This one actually, you know, shameless self-promotion. I've had this one for a bit now. I'm actually going to put this one up for sale soon because I found an even better, nicer variant of the same one. I found two of these in the last decade. That just gives an idea of how rare it is. And they're just not out there, period. So this is, I put an original bracelet on it. It came without a bracelet when I bought it.
Okay, I was going to ask,
But this is the bracelet that was actually issued on these watches when they were sold. Rather, it was issued to the Japanese military with that bracelet, I don't know. There's not a lot known on these watches, except they were in fact issued. I mean, I know that there's this video on YouTube, because YouTube is amazing. That's why you guys are on it. Or maybe YouTube is amazing because you guys are on it. I don't know.
I'll take it. I'll take full credit for that.
There's a video, and this is on the website, actually, on our website, but there's a video from like this 80s TV show, and they're interviewing Japanese fighter pilots, and that's who were issued these watches. And you can clearly see one on the wrist of one of the Japanese fighter pilots as it's being interviewed. So
that's really cool. You know what pops into mind, and this was never going to happen. So like, anytime we talk about vintage watches, my frame of reference is always going to be my background, which is vintage Soviet watches. And one of the things that always happens in vintage Soviet watches, and I'm wondering in regards to a watch like that, is more often than not, it used to be the case, not really the case anymore, but it used to be the case that if you found a Slava Medical or like a Gen 1 prototype Vostok Amphibia swing lugs, that the person that had it did not know what they had in regard to that particular 6139 you're talking about, with these, you know, these Air Force, Japanese Air Force issued ones. Do folks know what they have when you find them? Or is it like I found this in a drawer along with Q-tips from 1985. I don't know what it's worth.
So, you know? Do you mean with just this one watch, or just
your
you mean
that particular, that particular watch?
That particular watch? I don't know. No one's ever sold one. I have never seen one on any of their usual suspect sites, eBay, Chrono 24, etc. They just don't pop up. So one of the great things, but it's also, you know, I got to be careful not to overdo it. As we've been in business for 12 years since 2012. So as our name has gotten out there, you get more people that will reach out and they'll be like, "Hey, I've got this for sale." So it's like, it's tempting for me, obviously, to be like, "Oh, that's mine. I'm keeping that." You know, so you can overdo it. Like I said, literally, I've seen two for sale.
Wow.
In 10 plus years, and that's it.
And we're in like, uncharted territory.
It really is. Like, I don't know what I'm going to charge for this when I put it up there, because I don't know. There's no, you can look at the market and like an eBay, what's sold, what the median price was, et cetera. That doesn't exist here. Like, it just doesn't.
It's one of those things where, especially in the vintage watch market, it is worth whatever someone will pay. But if you don't have a history of what people have paid for it, I'm curious to see what happens. Everyone keep an eye on to tell everyone the URL so folks know.
So it's for the website. Sorry, I have my puppy here, and he just tried to chew on the cap of the beer.
Oh yeah.
Take it from him. So our website is www.dcvintagewatches.com.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. I'm excited to see the listing when it goes up there.
Sometime in the next month, I suspect.
Okay. Awesome wrist check. Mike, do you want to go next?
Yeah. That's a pretty cool watch. I think when anytime I think issued Seiko military stuff, my brain immediately goes to the RAF quartz models. Yep. I never thought, you know, that a watch like that would exist. That's kind of wild. For me today, I'm wearing the newly released Notice Contrail GMT. It's actually just put up for sale last Friday. And I'm going to see if I can pull this up so that we can all see. I have this one specifically, the Laguna Dial Contrail GMT. So this is the next installment of their, I guess, like pilot watch, travel type watch that they've been making for a while now. Before, it only had the 12-hour rotating bezel, and this is the first time they come out with the GMT version with the new Seiko. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. This is the Miyota 9075.
Yeah, I got the email for this like last week, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. You get three time zones, so you have the internal scale, you have the rotating bezel, jumping local hour hand. I don't know much about this movement. I was able to test out the Notice Raven Trail Trekker, which is kind of the same platform, but without the rotating bezel. And I think they're going to go pretty far with this specific family of watches, because they can they can create a lot of different versions. They can do one with a dive bezel. They can do one with a fixed bezel. So I'm happy to see that these were released. This is the one specifically that I have here. It's got that textured, almost gold flake dial kind of thing with the black. And
I know you wouldn't be conscious of this or mind this because of your Doxa, and I'm only saying that because what's the sizing on this? Because that feels like a lot of bezel. Is the dial like super? Is it like a super tiny dial?
I don't really feel that actually. It's a 40.5 in diameter, just shy of 12 millimeters thick and 46 ish lug to lug. So
I love that thickness. Heck yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, okay. I think the dial, that may have to do with the sapphire on the bezel. Maybe it's creating some kind of optical thing. I don't know. It does. It might feel like
is it gas off of Venus creating an optical illusion? Like what's the sapphire optical? What do you mean? Like a glare?
Maybe. I don't know. It's a lot of sapphire. I will say that.
Okay.
That loom on the bezel is amazing. I love that's that fun. extra detail like that. That's great.
Yeah, and they have a couple. I mean, if I were to get one, it'd be this one because this version has the full loom on that one half. Of the bezel, that white.
You know what? It actually, the Impulse, the one in the middle, reminds me of. It reminds me. Lejeune teamed up with Navigraph, the French military, the French Navy, to issue a GMT, and it looks similar to that. Like the blue top half and the white bottom half. It's a GMT.
That's cool. Yeah,
I'll have to check.
And
that out.
They made maybe 300 or 400 of them, I think.
Wow.
Damn. But yeah, this is what cool. I got. This is what I got today. It's 8:25, and I'm working on a review for this site. I got it all photographed and stuff, and
nice.
Yeah, should see it on the Two Broke Watch Snob site sometime soon.
Love it. It's me. Is that my turn?
Yeah. What you got?
I'm wearing my Seiko 5, my Seiko SNK 805. This is the I think I talked about this like a few episodes ago. First automatic watch, Mike. I consulted with you on this watch. This is the older sort of generation of this kind of fieldy pilot style Seiko 5 piece that you most folks got on Amazon. For what we can tell, they've basically been discontinued. No new Seiko 5s are coming out that I'm aware of, like this with the 7S26. They're all coming out with the 4R30-35. That's what the new, like the midfield ones are coming out with, right, Mike?
I think so. 4R35 or 36. It's funny that watch being so close to my resume that you showed me before. It's just it makes me think that those two items have been in the same room a lot of times
for a long time. Yeah, for folks who don't know, Mike and I met through work, and then I got this watch because I knew Mike was a watch guy before we were friends. And I'm just like, hey, I need a watch I'm looking at watches for a job interview, blah blah blah, and like that's how I ended up with this thing. But I love this watch. This, you know, I say this story a lot, and I think most collectors should be a little more in touch with the idea of those first two or three watches you get end up controlling your tastes and predilections for the rest of your collectioning journey. Whether or not you want the antithesis of what you first started collecting, or if that drives you towards things that you've liked about those first pieces, those first watches do make a pretty big difference. Yep. And so that's what I'm wearing for the show. I thought it would be fun. It's this is one of the watches I just kind of keep close to me, like at all times. And so when we jumped on before we started recording, Nick and Mike saw me charging it up. And so the old 7S26 shake, it was just shaking it because the movement was empowered at that point. But that's what I got. That's what I got.
I always thought it was funny that people, and Nick, you can tell us if this is true. I've seen people argue about the right way to shake up a Seiko. They say you should do it like you're dealing cards. Like that's the only way to do it or whatever.
And it's funny you say that because we have, what's the last count? We have like 3.5 watchmakers right now. So one is part-time and like each one of them says different. And these guys special, like they do the bulk of our work in there, so they specialize in Seiko, it could be said. And they're all like, one of them's like, you just whip it like hard as you can, and the other guys are like, oh my God. And the other guys are like you said, like you're dealing cards, and I'm just like, just tell me what you want me to do.
Just to...
Well, I've done both and I've had no issues. So granted, if I'm whipping it, it's my own watches. So
nice. Yeah, the whipping, I don't know how I feel, but I do the Maraca. I just kind of just, I just, since
that too. Yep.
That's what it is. This is going to be a ton of fun. Before we get into the main topic, Nick, what I think would be really, really cool is just tell folks a little bit about, sure, you know, yourself, your background, how you got into, you know, starting your own business. And so, I mean, obviously this DC Vintage Watch takes a lot of different brands, but I think most folks historically are, they connect to you, and I'm looking at your site, that's why I'm pointing at right now, they connect you with Seiko. So I would just love to give you a few moments just to tell folks a little about yourself, yeah, in case folks have maybe seen you posting on Instagram or they've seen other people mention you, but they haven't really had the chance to, you know, really dig into it.
No, I mean, for it's funny that you mentioned, you know, people's first watches kind of predict one way or the other their future trajectory of watches. And it's 100% true for me. Like, one of my first watches was a Seiko 6139 automatic chronograph in high school.
Nice.
So that was,
that's 100% awesome.
Correct. You know, and it was back then, man, I'm not even going to go into how inexpensive they were back then. I mean, it was fantastic. But, you know, and so after that, so I, like we talked about before, so I worked for the federal government for almost 2 decades. And I was what would be called an Arabist. So I specialized in the Middle East. In college, I lived in Beirut, Lebanon. I lived in Cairo, Egypt, studying Arabic. This is during college years. And then, you know, at first I worked for Department of Defense for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which does the surveillance, the satellite imagery.
Yeah.
And this is a time before it became so ubiquitous with commercial satellite imagery, which is, it's amazing what they can do today, which may or may not have been only the realm of, you know, the federal government, you know, decades ago. It's pretty cool, actually.
Mm.
So, you know, I did that and for a few years, and then I took a 24/7 tour for 2 years in the White House Situation Room. And so this is a nonpartisan, non-political position. You are there. You don't rent your home agency, but you're there to run this. It's a 24/7 operations center. So they take personnel from the entire intelligence community, which NGA counts itself as, Department of State, Customs and Border Protection, all branches of the military. I was in there with like special forces guys, diplomats, CIA spooks, like all, we were all there in one place. So I did that for 2 years at the end of Bush, the beginning of Obama administration. Like, amazing time. Like, you see the picture in the background right there. I'm trying to point in the right direction.
A little bit, yeah.
Jay-Z and Beyonce. But then up there, meeting Obama when I was up in
Oval,
stuff like that. So, that, you know, it's, I got a picture over there with Bush. So it's like, no politics. It's all, you know, it's.
Sure. You're
these days to do that. But
you're there to do work. That's exactly the focus. Yeah.
So I did that, and then I did a diplomacy thing after that for almost a decade. And then my wife is a television producer. So I started this company in 2012. And it started as a side hustle. My wife is like, oh my God, you never shut up about watches. Clearly you love these things. Why don't you make us some damn money from it? And I was like,
that's funny.
Damn, she's got a good point here. So in 2012, started on eBay for like a year, and eBay was, I'm not a fan. Like, eBay, it's a necessary evil sometimes,
yeah,
but unless you really know what you're doing, it can be a minefield. And you know, hopefully they're not watching this, but their authenticity guarantee is kind of garbage, to be blunt with it.
I've heard some horror stories about it. Yeah.
It's marketing. It's a marketing gimmick. I mean, it is what it is. Do your research. That's all I'm saying. You know, that whole buy the seller, it doesn't have to be us. It could be anyone else. Just do your research in the seller and the watch. But so anyway, did that, continue to work for the government. And then basically I got a story, because Daniel Day Kim became one of my good customers. Square jawed, very handsome Asian American actor in Hollywood. He was in Lost. But he's been in ton of stuff after that. He continues. He's very busy. Amazing. It's kind of like this really influential figure in Hollywood. But he introduced me to a bunch of people, sold a bunch of watches, got an article in GQ on the Seiko 6139 Bruce Lee. And after that, it was kind of like, we kind of wanted to move to LA because of my wife's career, and I can't compete with her money ever. So it just made sense. And
sure,
you know, and you know, we had been, I'd lived in DC for most of my life, as had my wife, in the DC area and then in DC proper for 15 plus years 20 years. And at that point we had two kids, and just like, we're moving out to LA. So we moved out to LA in about 2018 and left the government and just started doing this full time. And it's been amazing since then. It's a bit long-winded explanation, but you know, we specialize in Seiko, Omega, Hoyer, that kind of thing. But it's the thing that I love about this work is I get to take the things that I love the most about my previous jobs, NGA, diplomacy, the White House, all that, the research, the right, trying to write in a, I don't always succeed, but trying to write in a concise fashion, just the facts, that kind of stuff, putting the story out there, telling a narrative, all that's present in my line now as running DC Vintage Watches. So doing the, you know, you see a lot of these watch sellers, I'm not casting shade, although I kind of am, they'll throw a watch up and they'll have like a paragraph.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a lot of stuff up there because that's what sells these watches, first and foremost, but second, the history is captivating. I love that. Like, yeah. I want to put it out there. I want other people to love this because clearly, as my wife said, I won't shut up about it. So, you know, that's us in a nutshell. And since then, we've been covered in a bunch of, like, been just, you know, it's been great. We've seen stuff. I had an interview in Houdinki, their 4+1 special, which tells a lot of my story out there, personal story. GQ, Worn & Wound, Fratello, all those. It's been really amazing, the journey so far. And that brings me here today. And it's great to meet other people that, again, to quote my wife, won't shut up about watches.
We're in the right place. We've done a lot of yapping about watches, I gotta say.
I have to wonder, Nick, how much watch spotting did you do at the White House?
Or were you not the same thing?
Right?
You know what? So I know the admin for Watches of Espionage. And First of all, if you're not following, you need to be. We have one article. I wrote one article for them on the Seiko McVie SOG that was issued. I'm not going to go into that too much. Just search the article on the website. It's amazing. Yep. I'm writing a second article. It's also in a Seiko 6139, but I'm not going to go further in that because that's going to come out in the next month or so. But I did an article on my White House Situation Room thing, and it just wasn't captivating enough. And I love him for that quality control because he's not just putting anything out there, even if it's like, oh man. So I'm probably just gonna put it up on the website. But there was a core group of watches that I wore during that time, and it was, there were two Seiko SKXs, the 007 009, so the black and then the Pepsi bezel.
Yep.
There was a Tag Heuer Aqua Racer that my dad gifted to me because he's real big in the Tag Heuer. Nice. When I graduated high school, the Big Zero is actually on there. And
really?
And I joke in the article that I wrote, and again, I'll put on the website probably next month or so, that when people found out it was Soviet, they were like, why do you have a Soviet watch in the White House?
And I'm just like, I imagine it would get looks in the White House. Yeah.
It did, but I was like, what? I'm Aldrich Ames, and we remember that guy, this spy against us for the Soviets, attended meetings in the White House. I was like, that's a Soviet you need to worry about, not this watch.
No, so, not my watch. That's
there was a few watches that I wore that I swore by. And then it was still vintage Seiko for sure. I mean, this is circa, this is during the aughts, during the late 2000s.
Did you ever have any other watch people there maybe recognize some of the vintage Seikos you were with? Or like, was there like a core?
There was.
Yeah, that's actually super interesting.
Yeah, they tended to be military special forces operators, actually, which is, I mean, if you look at how popular Watches of Espionage is, really no big surprise there. I mean, these guys, in a lot of them swore by the Seiko 6309 or the SKX. SKX got a lot of comments. And it was usually people that worked with me in the Situation Room. But I mean, there were people on the National Security Council, because technically that's what, if you're in the SIT room, you're on the National Security Council. You're an employee of that. So there were directors and deputy directors of various geographic expertises or things like terrorism or cyber or whatever. And some of them had special forces background, and they would always comment on something like that as well.
Amazing. I love just how multifaceted and just interesting the background that you have is, and how that's informed a lot of kind of what brought you to, you know, what you're doing now. And so it's always incredibly encouraging for me to hear that someone has lived a life and put themselves in a position for them to do what they love. So huge, huge props, huge kudos. That's amazing.
I can recall earlier in my career, someone during training was like, whatever you did before, it doesn't matter. And I was like, that's bullshit. And like everyone since has been like, that guy didn't know what he was talking about. And that's, it's like, funny. To wit, like with part of the job as a military imagery analyst with NGA in our training, we're looking at these photos of, here's what these military systems, Navy, Air Force, short-range ballistic missiles like a Scud or whatever, here's what it looks like in imagery, here's how long it is, here's these tools to measure on imagery and stuff like that, here's what it looks like, here's the imagery, here's what a decoy look like, an inflatable decoy,
or oh, wow,
something like a dirt mound shaped to look like a Scud launcher look like. And I think that specifically has helped me when you're looking at, you're trying to tell tells, if you will,
yeah,
on dials between fake and real. I mean, I will always credit that. I think that helped me quite a bit and continues to.
That's that hyper focused attention to detail. That's such an interesting.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. I think you might be the second person. We did have a British military service member that did image analysis on one of our previous totally episodes. Right. Yeah. So, man, that's so
cool. I may have worked for him for all I know. Because we obviously, you're DOD, so you're working with NATO allies, not in five. Are you familiar with the term Five Eyes?
Yes.
So we're Five Eyes people like nonstop. I mean, I worked with the my British counterparts all the time. I the TEYs to London were always fun. So, you know,
that's cool.
Amazing.
I'm on the site right now, and I'm looking at this 1996 Gen 2 UK yeah. Air Force chronograph. That's something I'm gonna stare at a lot later.
Oh, you got a big zero on here.
Yep. Yeah, just put it up this past week, just as I did with the UK RAF issued Gen 2.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, that's a perfect transition. Would love to just talk about the current market for vintage Seiko watches. I think just not talking, the Seiko thing's always really complicated, especially within the past, like, Mike, would you say 3 or 4 years, not even just vintage watches, but just Seikos in general are getting expensive, you know?
Yeah. They're coming out with, you know, the Prospects line is getting kind of broke this certain price bracket, and they're doing something
under four
else.
Digits all day. Prospects used to be under four digits all day.
They're doing something else called Lux now, which kind of folds. I'm not sure if it folds into the Prospects line, but yeah, that's pretty pricey as well. And then of course the reissues, people like me get mad all the time. They're kind of super limited I get the feeling that it's not what it used to be. I mean, we even saw this with the SKX when there was the whole discontinuation hype and everything. And so I guess we just wanted to pick your brain and ask for your opinion on what this landscape looks like now. What are some of the models that maybe people aren't totally looking at or maybe just flat out ignoring? I personally don't even I know almost nothing about the vintage chronographs, actually, because I never gravitated towards those. But seeing some of them on your site, I don't know, makes me want to learn.
Yeah. No, I mean, I still don't understand why Seiko replaced the SKX with what they did, because it's much inferior, in my opinion. And I won't dwell on it too much. I'm sure you guys have covered it. But and on the reissue thing, they almost always charge so much for the reissues. The only time I've seen the reissue be comparable in price to the vintage one was the Seiko 6117-8000 GMT, the Navigator timer.
I like that one.
And that was very faithful. And that's why we both like it, because it's so faithful to the original. And the price is about comparable, too, because particularly with the original bracelet, the vintage ones are not cheap. You can see why. They're incredibly handsome watches. And that I have one in my collection that I wear frequently. But no, I mean, what you're saying, and part of this, I hate to say, is my fault, because humble brag aside, what I do, like I've learned from my previous careers, like I network, I learn how to do advertising, I learn how to marketing. I'm talking with people like Cam Wolf, the senior watch editor for GQ, who is big on the Seiko 5 line. He's big on that, like you guys are, on the affordability, affordable watches. So he's putting out a mainstream, and GQ has a huge readership outside. I mean, yeah. You have something for Houdinki, which I like to call, it's a compliment, but I like to call the Vogue of the watch world, because it's within our niche. It's very widely read. It's there's going to be detractors, but on the balance, I think they put out great stuff and people know about it, but GQ transcends that. It's mainstream.
Yeah.
So anytime Cam talks about something, you see an immediate like attention to that thing. And I think some of that has been on vintage Seiko. So for instance, like GQ, like we were talking about before, GQ did that article on Bruce Lee wearing that Seiko 6139. And it just, I still have a wait list for that true Bruce Lee, as it were. Through my research, what I think was the variant that Bruce Lee wore, I still have a wait list for that. I'm working my way through it, but people are adding to it all the time that they want that one watch. So, you know, you're right in a lot of ways that the vintage Seiko is not affordable as it used to be. But I will say, and you've noted this, you both have noted this before and right now, before the show, that's just certain models. There are definitely some vintage Seiko automatics out there and vintage quartz in the early years that are very affordable. I mean, we talk about like the Seiko 7005 series, the 6619, the 6119. Those are automatic, you know, three-hand watch configurations in the late 60s throughout the 70s that had dozens of case variants, dozens of dial variants, and they all are built on these movements that are eminently affordable. We're talking like a couple hundred bucks, depending on the variant out there. So those are definitely something I sing the praises of.
Amazing. Yeah, it's not something I had thought about. Vintage Seiko, because of the prevalency of it and, you know, being mentioned by Cam and just by other websites, and people then also starting to associate the idea of vintage Seiko with, you know, popular figures. Mike just had that Bruce Lee one up. You get people who, this is what always happens when you get popular figures who wear watches, you get non-watch people looking for that watch. So you could have someone that's like a film buff or a tried and true like martial arts film buff, and they hear about the Bruce Lee, you know, a Seiko, and they're like, oh, that would be awesome. I'm gonna look for that. They don't know anything about watches. They're not a watch person. So like that would 100% will impact.
About a third of my customers that want that configuration, the Seiko 6139, the black dial one, a lot of them will write to me afterwards and be like, okay, how does this, they get the watch and like, okay, how do you get it to work? Because they're expecting.
It doesn't move.
Because they're expecting the large chronograph hand to be a normal seconds chronograph hand, or a normal seconds hand, but it's a chronograph hand. So it doesn't move unless you engage the chronograph. And it's fine. Like, I think I even have like in a Word doc somewhere, I have text saved that I just copy paste into the email. And then they're happy, you know. But it's interesting. And this is where watches, we talk about Cam being mainstream, but there's other things that are mainstream. And this is where, like, I look at the pandemic during 20, whatever you want to book in those dates at, early 2020 to 2022, coincided with this rise in anti-appy violence in the United States. Mm. And I had a lot of people reach out to me that identified themselves as Asian American. And they're like, when we bought this watch and I wear it, I feel more confident going out in public, and they will cite this violence factor. And there's still some of that today. I'm not saying it's gone away, unfortunately, but it's so you see that intertwining between watches and politics or culture. Like, everything is connected, to quote George Clooney from the movie Siriana, which is one of my favorite movies, but everything is connected in this. And I don't really see. And it's complicated because I never thought, when I'm doing this, like, I just love these watches. I'd never thought that this would be a factor into someone buying a watch. But it's interesting. And it's like, at what cost? But at least for me, at least I was able to, in some indirect fashion, bring them something that gives them more confidence and they love for that reason. But they didn't collect watches before. But they identified with Bruce Lee And I've had Daniel Day Kim tell me this actually, and a bunch and some other people that he hooked me up with, and they said that when we were growing up, we didn't have anyone that looked like us on the screen, on the movies, on the TV shows, except Bruce Lee. And that's where you see this. I just like him because I think he's a freaking badass. I mean, quite frankly. but there's multiple levels to this where people were like, this is someone I looked up to, and the representation wasn't really there except for him. So
that's amazing.
Really fascinating. And I, from my previous careers, I looked, you know, we're trained, if you're a military analyst or you're doing diplomacy or whatever, you're looking and researching culture of different countries and things like that. So you can't help but dork out on the many levels of these things. I mean, sorry to get too deep on it, but you know.
No, this is it. This is the show. The show maybe, is us doing exactly this kind of stuff.
Maybe if I buy one of these Bruce Lee models, I'll finally get the motivation to go to the gym. Because
you gotta get on the list, man.
You don't learn swimming. Don't learn swimming. Whatever you do, like there's a great picture. If you know Formula One driver Francois Sever, the ill-fated, doomed because he died, like a lot did in the 70s, racing. But he is swimming with his 6139 on, and he's like operating the chronograph in the pool. And I'm like, no. I don't care if it's brand new. Don't do that.
What a madman.
That's funny. I think to an extent that's normal. We talked a bit about before, you know, when you put something up on the site, you talk about the story, the impact, everything about that particular watch, because humans by their nature, they'll matrix to different extents. They'll connect ideas. They'll see things that are related to different things that they're familiar with. And so in lots of cases, when people start to research figures they like or time periods that they like, they end up liking all kinds of peripheral things around that. So that's cool. That's pretty badass. Yeah. No, so let's do this. If we were to give someone a recommendation, I think you talked about this a little bit. What I used to do when I was first getting into Soviet watches and when I was like hardcore looking for deals. And so just to clarify for folks listening, when I say Soviet watches, I mean watches produced not technically between 1917 and 1999, more like 1930-ish to 1991, excuse me. But the Soviet time period encompassing 1917 and 1991. What I used to do when I was really teaching myself is I would... And you can tell me if this does not work anymore for Seiko or if this is not applicable to Seiko. Yeah. I would just go to eBay. I would type in, you know, Vostok 2409 or Raketa 2609 or you know, First Moscow Watch Factory 3133. And I would those are all movement designations. And I would just go through hundreds and hundreds of pages looking at watches, trying to find something in the configuration that I liked. Because back then, it wasn't so much that all watch models were named. You kind of have to search for watches by their movement reference, unless they're a super popular model like the Big Zero or the Slava Medical that I have over there, anything like that. Is that applicable for Seiko? Is there like an option? You mentioned 7005. Is that?
So the way that this is Seiko, and this isn't, it's fun because I remember this when I was learning Arabic. So like, it's kind of mostly the case, but not always the case. When I was learning Arabic grammar is kind of like this a bit. But with Seiko, most of their, and they don't do this now, unfortunately. But if you look at maybe early, like late 80s and previous, you'll have four digits, a dash, and then another four digits. Those first four digits are in reference to the movement number. So if you literally just search for Seiko 7005, you're going to find every watch that had that 7005 movement. And then those last four digits are a number of things between the model, but also the last two of those last four can be the geographic region it was meant to be sold.
Oh, interesting.
So there's so many levels to this.
Does that sometimes control the desirability of it? So, and I'm sorry, I keep talking about vintage Soviet watches, but vintage Soviet watches, if it was like a Polish export Soviet watch, collectible, but maybe not as cool as someone that would want, you know, most likely like Cyrillic on the dial or something like that, because a lot of the Poland exports had English. Is there something similar in terms of desirability for Seiko models, that their geographic region designation?
There is, and it really comes to, again, like we were joking about earlier, it depends. So like with some of the SKX divers, it'll be like, they'll, and this is where it gets more complicated because you'll have those eight digits, and then separate you'll have SKX031J, and the J will mean Japan. So people there's some truth to this, but I think there's mostly not. But people will want the watches that were made in Japan proper versus Seiko facilities in Malaysia. And if I know Seiko, I know at least during that era, now it gets a bit sketchy, but except for Grand Seiko, the quality control back then was better than it is now. So Malaysia was probably the factors probably building to the same caliber as Japan was, but it's up into interpretation, I think. So you will see that geographic regions will be, and then you have Japan. Seiko really like to save their best stuff for the Japanese domestic market. So that watch that we looked at earlier was the Speed Timer variant, and Speed Timers, for the most part, not always, remember, almost always, except sometimes not, were almost always sold only in Japan, and we'll get that premium because some of the designs were wholly unique to Japan, and some of the cooler designs, I think, like the Seiko Bruce Lee you guys had up on the screen a second ago from our website.
That's cool.
There's a lot of detail to get into. That reminds me of when I was hunting all of those new Turtle reissues that came out. And it's like, okay, I had the SRP 777, and then I had the SRP 777J, which I thought was the Japan one, but it had a Japan dial, but the day window was English Arabic. And then I found
that's common. That's normal. That's
then I found the S. The SBDY015 that had the Japan dial and the kanji wheel, and I don't know why they did that.
Sorry.
I don't get it either. I thought the J would have been the JDM one, but I guess technically the other one was the JDM one.
But I know we just put up an SKX031J that is Japan, and it's you will see this actually enough where I think it's commonly accepted to be this is legit, where we'll have all of them will always have that English day of the week, and then this one, even though it's JDM, it's J, has Arabic, so you'll see the Arabic English, and I don't know why that is, like I mean, as an Arabist, I love that, don't get me wrong, but it's a bit weird, but it's legit.
Man, I took two semesters of Arabic in college, and I didn't. I was just trying to talk up this gal that eventually she was taking the class too. She became my wife actually, but
man, I did
that. It worked.
A girl I dated in college, she was Iraqi Kurdish, and that something similar, but I did not marry her.
Oh man, just the vowels and everything, and you're learning the modern standard Arabic, which nobody uses in real life.
It effectively doubled my college debt. True story. The overseas stuff. But I mean, it's interesting because, and I won't dork out on it too much, but like you go to some place like Lebanon, like everyone, like the first language, I swear, it depends where you are, of course, but if you're in Beirut, if you're in the capital, the first language tends to be French, and then it's English, and then it's Arabic. So it's like you can go there, and if you mangle the Arabic, as I'm sure I did, people will just, they'll be like, okay, he's probably American, so I'm going to go to English. And it's a handicap. But you go to Egypt, no one's speaking English. They're speaking Egyptian dialect Arabic only. And they can understand your Fusha, your modern standard Arabic, pretty well. But it was, I took some Arabic, I went to University of Maryland, College Park, and I took some Arabic there, and then I went to Egypt, and I was like, oh my God, I know nothing. And
I was not prepared.
I have a special understanding of people that come to the United States and don't speak English well now after that. I mean, it was intimidating. It was really difficult.
Yeah.
I believe it. So I have my frame of reference correct. You know, 7005, the first four numbers of the movement, the next four will control everything from what it looks like to its region. That's a good pocket for folks to get lost in. Because I used to love getting lost in it.
It's half the adventure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What would be some other good ones? I think I can't remember if we were recording, but you also mentioned possibly vintage quartz, which is always really dicey to me because I never don't trust someone to have not left a battery in there for 15 years or 15 or 30 years or whatever it is.
And it's so, and speaking of quartz, although it's not Seiko, but the Chronosport UDT, which or the Magnum PI one. I don't know if you're familiar with that watch, but the one that that Tom Selleck wore, Magnum. He wore a Rolex. I think it was a 1675 GMT, actually, the Pepsi, but he also wore a Chronosport in the first season.
Yeah.
And the quartz movements in those, because it's this analog digital, kind of like, you know, Seiko's Arnie, but are impossible to find. And it drives me crazy, because for the most part, the movement's great until it's not. And then you're basically, excuse my French, shit out of luck, because there's so few of those made. But for your run-of-the-mill quartz, that movement can be trashed. And because of the ubiquitous nature of how many watches and the availability that Seiko made these, you can find a donor out there on eBay or whatever. And usually for quartz, they're pretty affordable. Most Seiko quartz is not expensive, with the exception of, like you said, Mike, earlier, the UK RAF issued watches, because that military provenance tend to be a bit pricier than if the civilian model of that watch, because it's that history there. But a lot of Seiko quartz is pretty affordable. I would recommend that. I'm trying to think of any offhand, but
yeah, I was gonna say, what would be a good reference for folks if they were to like just go and start doing research?
And so I know, like, the Silver Wave line, like the if you look at any of the, and I'm looking it up right now, you look at the Seiko Silver Wave, and Seiko Silver Wave was quartz and it was automatic. So the quartz, especially, like, if you just go on eBay and literally type in Seiko Silver Wave, you're gonna find dozens of automatic and quartz. Some of the Silver Wave automatics tend to be a bit pricier when you deal with, because some of those are like mid 60s era, like the one you just showed up right now. Those are, I wouldn't consider those affordable. They tend to be more pricey, but the quartz ones are definitely entry level. And you have, I mean, there's heritage there too. I mean, you're talking 80s, early 80s, I think, for a lot of these.
Wow. So it's quartz and automatic?
Yeah. It was something they kept it throughout. I don't know why they did that. That's a good question. I never thought about that until now.
These are cool, though.
Deep thoughts. But I noticed with the quartz, that they called Silver Wave Z. So maybe that's Z for quartz or something. I never really thought about that.
Give folks the option, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a cool one. That's a good one. Okay.
But the quartz ones, and because of this link to James Bond, they tend to be a little bit more pricey, but not anything like their automatic counterparts. But there's websites out there. If you literally Google James Bond and Seiko, you're going to find a lot of references that were worn in the movies. They're worn in the films. And it's kind of cool, like, the way that Seiko really was trying to push that stuff out there. And a lot of people don't realize this, but Seiko was almost the sole reason for the decimation of the Swiss in watch industry. And Seiko more or less almost completely killed the American watch industry when they invented quartz. Seiko invented quartz, as far as I'm concerned, the Astron. And no one was ready for that. And Seiko and they started pushing it. They pushed in James Bond films, all these other, like, they've been very good and continue to be in marketing, even if it's like under the radar for the most part. They're Leo DiCaprio is not wearing one on the red carpet. They have other ways of doing that, because people see through that, I think.
What do you think of the older 7002 divers? So kind of what we got, just, they look a lot like the SKX 007, but I think that is the movement family just before the 7S26, if I'm not mistaken.
And at one point it was the most faked Seiko out there. Not so much now, because there's just not many of them left.
So they
used up all of them
way back. This is old podcast lore, but the 7002, that's the one that I'd pull up constantly, and it had like fishbone hands. Like, people did these weird mods with them all over eBay and stuff.
Yeah.
And I finally
found one guy in the Philippines that puts that out. I know that. I don't know the seller, but I know the account, because they pop up in searches. Yeah.
But they were doing it with 7002s, and I'm like, man, I just want to find a good one, which I did, and then I got rid of it.
The Faco dials for the 7002 got really good towards the end, and then they just, over the last 5 years, they've kind of just, there's not many of them out there, fake or real, compared to what they were 5 years ago.
So what's kind of a good order of operations to follow then, if you're, so let's say you've you're going to look into some of these models, you're going to go used by the seller. What are some best practices if you're looking off the top of my head? I watch a lot of the Spencer Klein videos, and he always has a lot of the same advice, you know, with the loom being salt based. If you see the blackening and stuff like that, you know, the water damage. I think he would always recommend strictly U.S. seller, maybe Australia. I don't know if that's still the same thing or if that's universal advice. What would you kind of recommend overall?
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting, and if you've been doing this long enough, you realize that you start to realize that some of the more humid climates, like the Philippines, like parts of Latin America, if the watch is not taken care of, if the gaskets aren't replaced, you're going to get loom rot. You're going to get rusted movements. Mm-hmm. It could be a crapshoot. So it's like you always want to get that shot of the movement if you're unsure of the seller. If you bought the seller and you know they're reputable, then it's whatever. Maybe they had a bad day and they forgot to take the picture or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you're unsure of their seller, always ask to see the movement shot so you can look for rust on the actual movement. Sometimes you'll see, particularly on Seiko, along the edges outside of the gasket, you'll see some corrosion. That's normal. That's outside the movement area. So that's outside of the inside of the watch because it's outside the gasket. That happens. Too much is a turnoff on that. So avoid that. But a lot of it's going to be like, are they getting too artistic with the photos? I do. So I'm not, I do, but that's just me because I like it. But are they like, do they look like, I could be dating myself, but like when I was in high school, the glamour shots were big, where like you go to this place in the mall and they think it's kind of like phase, it's like hazy, like picture, like they're kind of blurring out some of the details. That's a problem when you're looking at sellers on that. We put out we actually have an Instagram page called DCBW underscore Faco Friday. And like, I'll throw up some examples of Faco watches, just a quick perusal of the internet, of eBay, Chrono 24, Etsy, whatever. And I'll throw the 10 worst examples that I saw that week. I almost don't like doing those posts anymore because it's just so much crap out there. But, you know, there's some examples. Or it could just be like Google Image is your friend. So it could be, for instance, if you want to know what bracelet is original to a watch, throw the reference. And this is more than just Seiko. It's any watch. Throw it into Google Image. Try to look up the bracelet on it, examples of the bracelet. See what you see the most bracelets out there on that watch. And chances are it's probably the original bracelet that it came on, and use that to inform your searches. There's so many things that I do now that I just don't even realize that I'm doing because I've been for so long.
Yeah.
But it's like, for instance, even on the example you have up right now, like those are very, like it's this dial and some of the Pogue dials are the most faked now, as far as Seiko chronographs go. And some of the fake dials for the 6138 A20 Panda are extremely good. And you won't even know until you get it in the steel, as it were, and you take it apart and you look for that two-digit date stamp on the back of the dial, which is...
That's how you can tell.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but the Faco dial manufacturers have not caught on to that yet. That's your gold standard, but then you got to take the watch apart, and a lot of these sellers, legit and otherwise, they just won't... They're not willing to take the watch apart for that date stamp. I think back in the day we used to put pictures of it up, but at this point I'm like, look, honestly, if you don't trust us and all the stuff that we put out there, then you probably need to buy elsewhere, because my watchmakers are getting pissed at me because they're like, we don't want to keep taking these damn pictures, you know, and I try to keep the watchmakers happy because it's hard to find a good one, you know, so I do my best to keep them happy.
I think you're in a spot where like the reputation, it's not folks who are like, oh, I don't know this, who I've never heard of. like if someone even if someone were to stumble upon you for the first time, a little bit of Googling, a little bit of research, be like, oh, okay, this place is,
you're gonna see it. Yeah So then that's that buy the seller aspect.
I love talking to vintage watch people, those who like get under the hood of vintage watches as well, because I'm most curious in the answer to this question. So And again, I'm going to talk about vintage Soviet watches, so that's my bad, everyone at home listening.
No, and that's your frame of reference. Do it.
That is my frame of reference.
I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it. Yeah.
There's always so much There's a lot of sort of polemic discussion around Franken watches, the idea of it being Franken or donor, because you mentioned, you know, finding a donor part for a watch, and that's what sparked the idea in my head. I'm like, is that good Franken? Is Franken bad? I've always had it boiled down to a matter of intent. If you go to a listing and the listing says dial replaced, donor bracelet, okay. Yes. But if you go to a listing and you can kind of feel like it doesn't look right, it says like NOS or it doesn't mention anything about replaced or whatever, but that second version also just comes down to you having that knowledge. But I'm curious on your thoughts. Is there a spot where the idea of replaced parts enters maybe that negative aspect of Franken Franken watches? Does that hurt the value? You know,
I would say the non-negative, I don't know if I call it positive, but non-negative, like crystal replacement, as long as it is like you talked about Spencer Klein, like his 6139 crystals are well known to be the best out there. We use them frequently, not all the time, but we use them frequently. Crystals, not so much. It's very rare that I get anyone asking, because we also do like a vintage watch sourcing service, which is about half our business actually. Nice. It's very rare that people are like, I want the original crystal, because it's understood that's like you need the original windshield on a vintage car. Like it's probably not going to happen. You know what I mean? When you get dials are no, never an aftermarket dial ever, because anyone, myself, Eric Wynn, any dealer, any hardcore collector will tell you of any watch, dial is 70-80% of the value of the watch right there. Mm. Cause that's the heart, in my opinion, the only thing second to that would be, I guess, the movement, but the dial, then the second, and then the rest is, you know, it is what it is.
It's the first thing people see.
Yeah, it is. So that, an over polished case, but that's not really Franken or fake. That's just a general no-no. Hands can be a problem. If they're really good copies, maybe, but again, it's that matter of intent. So it's the transparency. Like in some Frankens, like myself, like Worn and Wound did an article on the watch line that we came out with, the Sycamore watch line. And I talk about the inspiration for that was me taking the watch that I'm wearing now, the 6139-7010, and mashing that up with a 6139-8020, which is kind of like the all black PVD 6139, and putting the dial with Arabic numerals on that watch, kind of like a military-esque watch. I wasn't trying to sell that. I was like, hey, I mean, I posted that on Instagram and it was actually a bit polarizing. Some people hated it. Some people loved it. I didn't care. I did it because I liked it. I wasn't trying to sell it. I was like, I like the way this looks and I'm going to wear it.
Damn right.
And you can see as you're putting up on the screen now, that was kind of the inspiration for that watch. The all black PVD, the numbers, either Arabic language or, you know, English numerals are Arabic numerals in the true sense of it. But and that's kind of, you know, what we have here. And that was the early inspiration for me to come out with our own watch line, taking various aspects of what I love of watches, but also my personal history that I talked about earlier with the federal government, living in the Middle East, learning Arabic, even the fact that, you know, at my feet right now, I have a seven-month-old now German Shepherd that I just adopted from a rescue. And my love of German Shepherds is in there as well. So it's a very personal project for me.
I think anyone that really gets deep into not even just watches, but anything that necessitates the collector's mentality, whether it's, you know, comic books or guitars, or in this case, watches, like at the end of the day, your collector's journey, if you can look back and say, yep, no one else had the same journey as I did, that is, for me, that's a win. And so your journey being expressed through the release of these pieces in the Sycamore collection, like it is your perfect manifestation of where you are right now in your collector's journey. And Mike and I say that to people all the time, like don't collect or express your horological passion in a way you think people want to see. And like, that sounds like a no brainer, you know, when you say it out loud, but I don't think people realize, cause it happens to me. Like you start to think like, I'm going to a nice party, I better put on a watch that, you know, people are going to like, or something like that. It's just like, it's, it's pretty interesting. So it's just, it's been amazing. It's just been amazing just catching up with you and chatting. And then I'm glad we were able to talk about the Sycamore collection, but I'm looking at the time and I know we got to be conscious of time right now, at least on my end, but I feel like there's so much more to say. We will have to probably do right. Like another, like we totally just scratched the surface of it.
I'm here for it.
I'm very tempted to finally get on the record and ask, what is a true pogue? Like what? I hear that. I just hear that all the time. And maybe that's a good thing to wrap up on, but like, is there a checklist or something?
There is. Yes.
I hear that all the time and I never know what it is.
And this is myself, but also other people out there. Anthony Cable, he spells it with a K, and there's a couple other people that really decide, and like in the bottom of the dials, there's these dial stamps, and it's like this esoteria of knowing how to read these things, like the serial number, like the reference number, all that fun stuff. And we only have one picture of what Colonel Pogue wore on his Skylab 4 mission. And Amy, you saw up on the website earlier, we just put out these sticker packs, and in there I have like the true Pogue. If you bring it up, you'll see the true Pogue configuration. I made a sticker of it. And I'm selling it in our sticker packs or whatever. But so nice. It's, we only have that one picture when Colonel, it's the other one, the other sticker pack for the Seiko 6139. When Pogue put it up for auction, it garnered, I think, 6K. And this was like 10 years ago, which is, not, it's a space flown watch, and it garnered 6K. And he gave it to charity. And so we only have that one picture. That was an auction posting. We don't have the case back. So people will fight over, is this 6139, 6002? 6139, 6005, but if you read the dial stamp on the bottom, it's a 6139, 6005. That's it right there. And you'll see it says automatic under Seiko. It says the water 70 millimeters resist at the 9 o'clock. It's going to be a Spanish English day wheel. There you have the Spanish example showing. And the configuration you have right there, that is a true Pogue configuration. Anytime those go up for auction on eBay, you're going to get 2 to 3, sometimes 4 times more than a more conventional Pogue will go, simply for that reason, because that's the one, that's the variant dial, the dial variant that Colonel William Pogue wore into outer space.
That's awesome. So you there should you go, Mike. I guess if you're looking at those listings, the seller should always have it clicked over to the Spanish, right? I mean, cuz you got to see that then, right?
And some people may not know, and that's when you got to ask questions, you know, that eBay message aspect is your friend. And this is actually, I'll leave it with this gem. You know, some of eBay, if you know eBay's guarantees and stuff like that, separate from the authenticity guarantee, but you know their rules, it can be hugely beneficial if you're sketched out about a watch, but you're thinking you're going to pull the trigger, ask them questions. When they answer those questions, they're on eBay's system and if they say something in that response that turns out later to not be true, you have a legit case for item not as described, and you can open that case and eBay's going to take your side. So it's the legalese, if you will, of knowing how the eBay system works. So it's like, you got to be well-versed in that stuff, and it can help you. That's what I tell people all the time.
Or you can mitigate your risk and just get your vintage Seiko from DC Vintage Watches.
Yes, buy from us. I'm just kidding.
That is also an option.
It's all the above, man.
This is so cool. This has been a ton of fun. So let's do this. Let's round the show out. So Nick, just so you know, we're gonna round the show. We'll say bye, 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 and then Mike's gonna stop recording, but we can stay on afterwards for just like a couple of minutes, and then sure. And then we'll actually really leave. So you all at home won't get to see us actually say goodbye to each other. But we're gonna do a fake goodbye on air for all of you people listening wherever you are. But
yeah,
what do you say, Mike?
We'll start that now.
Let's start that now. But here's Mike,
the fake goodbye.
This is the fake goodbye starting now. Nick, thanks so much. This has been a ton of fun. We have to have you back on the show because I know we're going to get a bunch of questions and thoughts and insights from folks because this is something that really touches a lot of what people are into with watches. So that said, if you enjoyed the show, if you have any thoughts or comments or questions, feel free to comment on YouTube. You can comment on Instagram. I think we'll do an Instagram post for this as well. You can also roll the dice and take a shot at our inbox at tbws.contact@gmail.com. But otherwise, let us know your thoughts on the show however you want. But I think with that said, Mike, is it that sad time?
I'm excited about Seiko again. Yep. Thanks.
I am excited about Seiko too. Nick, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm really happy to have been here. And you need me back, I'm back. I'm here.
I love it.
I hinted on this earlier. I love the fact that we can just have all these like minds just dorking out on watches, man. I love this stuff. And then my wife probably likes it too, because that's less of me talking about watches around her. At least for a little bit.
We're getting it out of our systems now.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so good. Here, Mike, you can start to say goodnight to the kids, and then I'll round it out and tuck them in.
Thanks for listening, guys. My name is Mike.
And this is Kaz. You have been listening to Two Broke Watch Knobs. Later.